My name is Mojgan Osman. I'm working with the students for Free Tibet in Madison, Wisconsin, as well as nationally on the board of directors. I feel kind of awkward standing up here at a podium speaking to you because I always identify that with lectures and boring things. And you know what we're talking about here today is definitely not boring. We're talking about human rights and your involvement in the changing of the global system. That's pretty exciting. I guess I just want to start with a little story. I was walking in my neighborhood the other day in Madison, kind of reflecting upon what's happened this week with Tibet, the recent visit of Jiang Zemin, the premier of China, to Washington and other places in the U.S., and thinking about that. And I walked into an elementary school, just wandering around, and I saw these lists on the wall from the children, and they had kind of wish lists for Christmas. I want a pony. I want, a new doll. And I thought, hey, it's been a long time since I made a list. I want to make a list, too. You know, I'm not Christian, but I want to make a list of things that I'd like, And I thought about it, and I think I'm over the pony thing, and I'm definitely over the new doll thing. And I didn't know who to address it to, It's been a long time since Santa Claus was around to give us the things we wanted. So I just started writing things down. I came up with a pretty long list of things that would make me happy, would probably make the people I love happy. And, no specific order. Things were like Free Tibet, democracy in China, food for the world, and the U.S. war on the people of Iraq. There was a lot of things on that list. And then I thought, I started thinking about the children in the school, and then I started thinking about children in Tibet. Like this young man, Gendin Chukinima. He's 8 years old, and he's the youngest political prisoner in the world. He's a Tibetan boy, and more than that, he's the second most important political and religious leader of the Tibetan people. And he's missing. He was identified by the Tibetan government in exile and His Holiness the Dalai Lama as the reincarnation of a very high Lama. And as soon as this happened, the Chinese government abducted him and his family and have released no information for 2 years about his whereabouts. Now, what is the crime in being an 8-year-old boy? What is the crime in that? You can point fingers at political prisoners. You can say things about adults who are in prison and say, well, maybe they really did do something. Do we really have all the facts? Maybe they really did piss off the government. Maybe they deserve to be in jail, right? What about this little boy? Is there any justification for that? Is there any reason that the international community has recognized the fact that, yes, he is missing, but no, we're not going to do anything about it? No. I mean, clearly no. There's no reason for this young man and his family to be missing. And beyond that, there's no reason for the Chinese government to take the liberty to appoint another young man in the position of this boy. So now we have two boys vying for the position of second highest leader of the Tibetan people. One of them is missing, the legitimate young man, and the other young man is being educated to take the place of the Tibetan people. Now, he was elected by the Chinese government. Isn't that strange? An atheistic government appointing a religious leader to represent a group of people who the Chinese government do not even respect as a separate entity? Boy, that is kind of strange. So I'm thinking about all these things as I'm going through my list. I'm wondering, who am I supposed to address this to? Who do I go to? Take me to the principal's office. Do I go to Washington? Do I give it to Bill Clinton? Do I give it to Jiang Zemin? What do I do as a recent graduate? What do people in my position do? And I've been thinking about it, and, I thought, I really should just be addressing it to myself. It's not going to do me any good to stand up here and ask you to do it for me. Just take the responsibility for myself and hope that everyone else does that too for themselves. Now, there's a lot of support that we can get from other people, but it really just takes the determination of figuring out for yourself that it's something that is important to you, something you want to do. Now, there's a lot of issues you can work on. I'm not asking you to work for the freedom of Tibet. I'm not asking you to work for the freedom of this young man. Anything that you do, any of the causes that you choose, will help because ultimately the success of all of the groups that we're working for, Free Nigeria Movement, Free Burma Coalition, Students for Free Tibet, whoever you're talking about, it's our strength in numbers. It's our differences that, you know, make us grow, and our commonalities that move us forward. Now, this can be directly seen in the case of this past week in Washington. I was fortunate enough to go with 9 Tibetan people from Madison, refugees, and 8 students from Madison. We drove down to Washington and expected to see a flood of Tibet supporters out for the rallies protesting Jiang Zemin's visit, hoping to just see him for a moment, to tell him or tell the president that we want to see changes for Tibet, for China. And instead, what did we find? We found hundreds of people from the AFL-CIO, hundreds of people from Amnesty International, people from the Free Burma Movement, people from Chinese Democracy Movement, Taiwanese Collegiate, people from every kind of movement you could imagine, Hollywood stars, rock stars, Newt Gingrich. I don't share a lot of similarities with Newt, I'm afraid. We have a lot of differences, but I was happy to see him there. I was very pleased in some of the things that he said. Doesn't mean I support him in every other political aspect, but we can't choose our enemies and focus so strongly on them and not recognize that our enemies are actually our teachers. They're actually teaching us how to approach these movements and how to approach these issues in the best ways. Instead of making enemies of everyone, we've got to make friends of everyone. And I know that may sound strange. Yes, Chinese government has been responsible for the slaughter of 1.2 million Tibetan people. And they're imprisoning monks and nuns, women, children, daily, forcing them in slave labor camps. This is happening all around the world. You've heard the facts, you've read things. But I refuse to have any anger towards Jiang Zemin. I refuse it. Because that's what he wants. That's what they expect. They expect us to be furious and angry, and they know how to respond to violence. And we will not respond with violence. We refuse to. It's only through dialogue, it's only through coalition building that any of this is ever going to happen. It's not an us-them mentality when we're talking about social change, and I really want to make that clear. I refuse to make an enemy of our so-called opponents. I refuse to, and I hope that somewhere in your experience and what's happened to you, you've seen also that it's futile to approach these issues in a violent way, because violence only goes in circles, creates more violence. So I wanted to stress that, and I also wanted to tell you a little bit more about the rally. When we were going down to Washington, we were in a big white van, and on the sides we had written Free Tibet. And people would, you know, at the gas stations, people would ask, hey, what's a Free Tibet, and why are you giving them away? And I was thinking, God, Moj, you know, as much press as you get, as much as you are on the television, in the movies, Brad Pitt's movie, whatever, as much as you're on the screen, no one is going to, you know, the average person's just not going to know about Tibet unless you get out there in the grassroots way, on campuses, in communities, in churches, and talk about Tibet. Tell people what is happening. Tell people what's happening in Nigeria. Tell people what's happening in Burma. Give them a choice. Let them know what's happening all around the world. There's not just, you know, small issues. There's big issues, and they're happening all over the place. And people will make a personal connection somewhere and get involved. And I just stress that education, just letting people know, we don't have to make our so-called opponents into demons. We don't have to demonize them. They've already done what they've done. They're still doing it. We just have to show people. We just have to expose them, to step back and say, look at the madness, you know? Look at what's happening. And people will decide for themselves. I just wanted to talk, you know, real briefly about some of the actions that people can take on behalf of Tibet. These can apply to other movements as well. Students for Free Tibet has been extremely successful for various reasons, including a lot of media, a lot of attention to the nonviolent aspect of our campaigns. And some of the successes we've had are the Holiday Inn, was a recent target of boycotting from us for their involvement in a hotel in Lhasa, the capital of Tibet. Holiday Inn, after probably 9 months of boycotting, my Students for Free Tibet and other groups, has pulled out of Lhasa. They've agreed to discontinue their business there, to discontinue their legitimization of the Chinese occupation of Tibet. We've also had successes in passing legislation similar to the pioneers of the movement, you know, the Free Burma Coalition as well as the Nigeria movement, and getting selective purchasing and city and county agreements. We're following in their footsteps, and we've passed legislation in Berkeley. We're hoping for 25 other cities this year. And the unique position of the selective purchasing that we pass is that we are giving, it's not an all-out boycott, it's not an all-out end of business with any corporations in Tibet, it's an end of business with bad businesses. And bad businesses are determined by the government in exile, the Tibetan government in exile, and that gives power back to the Tibetan people. Development has to happen in Tibet, we're all aware of that, in order for the country to progress, in order for people to eat. And we're just, by passing the legislation that we've come up with, cities will work with the government in exile to determine what businesses are bad and what businesses are good. So it's not an all-out block of business in Tibet. And something else we've been successful in was just, you know, this rally, intense, you know, more than 1,500 people there supporting Tibet from all over, all walks of life. So things that you can do to get active if you're interested, passed out postcards like this. We're trying to send 1.2 million messages to the president, one for every person who's been killed by the Chinese government, telling him to push for negotiations between His Holiness the Dalai Lama's government in exile and the Chinese government. So if you could take a minute and fill that out, the person who handed it out to you will come and collect it. Also, I've got a packet of political actions you can take for Tibet. They're out on the Wisconsin Greens table out in the hallway. And just talk about Tibet. Let people know. Tibet is not a commodity. We're not giving away free Tibet. You know, it's something we're working towards. And I hope it's on your personal laundry list of Santa Claus presents, President Clinton presents, whatever personal presents list you want to make. Hopefully Tibet will be somewhere on there. And, you know, this Christmas, think about, you know, Genden Shikhi Nima. Just think about him for a minute. Think about him over your holiday, whatever it happens to be. Think about it daily if you're meditating. Just think about this 8-year-old boy. Maybe you can help someone like him.